Yes, this is where we are burning down the house on HeritageRadioNetwork.com. It's the eve of Thanksgiving, 24th November. For our non-American listeners, that piece of music is really vital and indicative of the festival, the national, secular, quasi-religious event that we celebrate in the fourth Thursday of every year that we call Thanksgiving, when we give thanks for all the good things that we have in our traditional American life. And it goes back to the early 1600s, when there's this sort of mythical feast that happened between the separatist pilgrims who had settled in Massachusetts Bay Colony and sat down and put aside their differences with the Native Americans and had a feast. So this is our national feast day happening tomorrow. And I thought I would just start with something a little bit different, because it is a very important event that everyone observes, despite our many, many different cultural backgrounds. Everyone celebrates Thanksgiving in his or her own way. Little housekeeping here. This evening we're brought to you by Cabot Cheese. For holiday recipes, let the great taste of Cabot Cheese make them even more special. Award-winning Cabot Cheese, 100% of their profits go to New England and New York farm families. Learn more about them at cabotcheese.com on the web. Now, I would like to get into some technical discussion that would be of special interest to those of you who are not in the profession. Recently, I've had several different people ask me, because they had worked with designers and had not been had it made very clear how design services progress from the very beginning, stage by stage by stage. If you look at the movies, for example, if you have seen that classic film with Cary Grant and Myrna Loy, Mr. Blandings Builds His Dream House, you might think that the design process is rather haphazard. They go to a local architect. He's got a very nice office. You know, has a fireplace, and he's wearing a tweed jacket with leather patches on his elbows, and he's smoking a pipe, you know, and he's very, he has a slightly British accent, you see, to signify that he's a very cultured fellow. And they give him the barest of information about what they want, and he proceeds to draw up a whole house. Well, in reality, it really should not happen that way. There are distinct phases of architectural services. And by architectural services, I mean services provided by an architect. And we'll talk about the reason you should be aware of this distinction a little bit later. One of my clients really got had a case of seriously wrong service at the hands of a designer. But we'll get to that later. What happens first is, of course, you'll have an interview with your architect, and she or he will just show you some of the work that they've done or ask you questions about how it is that you like to live. Let's just focus narrowly now on residential design, because that, for most people, is the venue you are most likely to meet an architect in. And almost all architects, actually, in the United States, work in very small firms, either for themselves as sole proprietors or in firms of three or fewer people. That's the majority of practice. And there are only fewer than 106,000 licensed. We also call them registered, because they're registered with their jurisdictions. Registered architects in the United States, and about three times that number who are not licensed or registered, who work in architectural firms. So the architectural community in the United States is really it's a very small number. We're talking about 450,000 people in a population of 325 million. I mean, which is a tiny, tiny little profession. So you have an interview and you generally talk about what sort of house you would like to have. And then you should have a letter of agreement or a contract that is in some specificity detailing what you as the owner are going to be doing in terms of contributing towards the design process, because you will have ideas. You may have collected a whole catalog of cuttings and clippings of things that you like, and that can be very helpful. It could also be very frustrating because you may find that these things really don't work out. But that's part of the design process. So at the very beginning, and this I want to talk about today specifically, the program. You really have to have a written statement of what spaces and what functions that you need to have or want to have would be nice, and if it can be fit in within your budget and within the limitations of the site where you're going to have this house built, should be incorporated. So that's called the program. The other phases then proceed in a process. First, there's schematic design, in which we generally create plans and sections, slices through the building, and elevations showing the arrangement of spaces and generally the form of the building, how tall, what sort of roof, without getting into too much specific detail about exactly what materials or exactly what structural systems are going to be used. And there's a play back and forth of discussing options between the architect and the owner. And we have, finally, an agreed-upon schematic design that shows the sizes of spaces and how they're going to work. It would be good in that schematic set of drawings if the furniture that's going to be in these rooms is indicated to scale, so you understand the negative space around the objects in the various spaces and how you will use them. And then we develop the design by getting into more specificity with materials and specific construction details. So that's the next phase. It's called design development. So this far we've got the preliminary stage of the programming or programming phase, and then schematic design, and then what we call DD, design development. So we have program, SD, DD. And once we have the building really refined and we know what materials we're going to use, how the structure is going to work, how the heating and cooling systems are going to work, how the lighting is going to be in each of these rooms at the end of DD, design development, then we get into preparing the contract documents. So those are drawings and specifications. Now, in most house projects, we'll give the specifications for the materials right on the drawings. We will say, for example, that all framing lumber shall be Douglas fir number 1 or better, with a bending stress of 1,150 pounds per square inch. That's a specification. It tells the builder exactly what kind of framing lumber that they should be providing. Or the concrete should be rated at 5,000 PSI at 28 days. That's another kind of specification, which is needed because these items have cost implications. For example, that could be concrete that was only 3,000 PSI at 28 days. It's having been cured for 28 days in place, and that's a little bit cheaper. But you may need something a little stronger if the soils in your area are weak. So these are the phases leading up to bidding. We get competitive bids from possibly from individual trades or from general contractors. And that phase is called bidding. And then there's construction, which we architects call construction administration for our part, where we generally observe that the work being put in place. We do not inspect, because we're not inspectors in the sense of being on the project on a daily basis. That would be being a clerk of the works. Now, some owners will request that. It's a costly measure, but it ensures the best possible quality. If you're in doubt, you can hire the architect to provide a clerk of the works. We would love to do that for you. Put someone on the job site every day. So during construction administration, the building is built. Then there's a closeout. We do a punch list. That's also part of construction administration. And if it's a good architect, they'll stick around and make sure that you're happy when you move into the house, and may advise you even on where you might be wanting to hang art and furnishings. Those are additional services that are not part of the strict practice of architecture, but they are services that architects are trained and competent to do. So imagine that this process is setting out in a caravan, in a series of traveling cars, and we're loading up the camels, and we're going to go across this great desert of unknown discoveries, full of hopes and inspirations and aspirations. So let's set the scene with a little bit of music before we set out. Good travel music. That's Boudibar. I think they're from Paris, and I think they're Algerians, and they got a nice blend of cultures going there. Little synth and a lot of Middle Eastern stuff happening. This is Burning Down the House on HeritageRadioNetwork.com. I'm Curtis B. Wayne, your host. And on this Thanksgiving Eve, as you're doing your shopping later, look for cabbage cheese for your favorite parties. and party recipes. Let the good, great taste of Cabot cheese make them even more special. Cabot cheese of Vermont, dairy farm family owned since 1919, and proud to be voted your four-time champion cheddar. Look for the really great taste of Cabot cheese in your favorite grocery's dairy case on the web at cabotcheese.com. So we've set out on this journey of ideas and thoughts and the things that you really need in your house and the things that you'd like to have and what you think what you'd like it to look like. Here's an email that I got from a prospective client just the other day. At first she mentioned on the phone that she really liked the beach house in that horror movie Sleeping with the Enemy with very young Julia Roberts. If you've seen the movie, you'll remember the house. The house is a really important co-star. And it's a typical all-white house with black tile floors, and it's right on the beach, and it has a lot of glass. You know, architecturally, it's kind of nondescript. It's just a big white structure with lots of glass and lots of ship rails, the horizontal steel rails all around, give it a sort of a nautical air. And there's a dock, and there's a sailboat that's tied up. And so this is what this person from New Haven wrote to me. Okay, here's my dream house. Lots of windows. I love natural light. Open floor plan. I love to entertain. Master bedroom on the first floor with a full master bath, an open shower, a tub with jets, double sinks, a heated floor, and heated towel racks. Guest rooms and bathroom upstairs or on the other side of the house because I like company. A gas fireplace in both living room and master bedroom because I get cold in the winter and I love to look at fire. A huge kitchen with lots of room for people to join me as I cook. Bar stools at the island so we can all visit while sipping a nice Malbec wine, listening to music and enjoying each other's company. Outside, lots of grass and flowers. I love the green of spring and the blooming flowers of summer. Outside deck or patio, as I love to sit outside and read when I come home from work with a nice glass of Pinot Grigio. Well, I mean, that is highly aspirational. I mean, I look at this analytically and I say, Jesus, this is a lot of space for a single person. Even a single person who likes to entertain a lot. I mean, this is going to be a lot of space. Now, as we would develop a program, we'd look at each of these areas. You know, the large kitchen. What does that mean? How much and what kind of cooking do you do? These days with cooking techniques, that could mean anything. Some people call cooking what we foodie people would call simply prep. You know, they get something and they nuke it in the microwave. Other people have to have a six burner commercial grade stove, like a Vulcan or a Wolf, something like that, which is a big appliance to have in the kitchen. Other home cooks even now are getting into sous vide cooking, where you cook at very low temperature for a very long time in a not very warm bath of water. And so you'll need counter space because you have to use a circulator, which is a $1,000 piece of equipment. Yeah, if you listen to Cooking Issues with Chef Dave Arnold, he'll tell you all about sous vide. But some home cooks are getting into doing that. And so it's a matter of getting to understand. As the architect, we need to get to understand how our clients live. Unless, of course, if you take the extreme example of Frank Lloyd Wright, he would tell his clients how he thought they should live. For example, he never, ever designed houses with much closet space because he said, well, you don't need all that stuff. Just get rid of it. You just need a few pieces of clothing. Perhaps some clothes presses, you know, the old-fashioned laundry presses, like big drawers so you can lay out your off-season clothes. But that were those were features in his earlier houses. His later houses had practically no storage space whatsoever. In that way, he was very modern. He was like the New Canaan modernists, like Elliot Noyes and John Johansson, who came later on. In that regard, where you only had the beautiful items that you would display. No junk, no knickknacks, only specially selected, beautiful, almost like a museum items on a special shelf. But this is all part of programming. And it's a creative process because it's an exchange of ideas. Let me talk, and here in this particular brief, as we call it in British English. She speaks of gas fireplaces. Well, that's a nice feature. Just turn on a timer and you've got instant flame. And it'll turn itself off after a certain period of time. And, lots of windows. Well, there are trade-offs of lots of windows or a few specifically located windows that look at something with the specific view in mind. So the received notion of a modern house with all windows, such as, for example, Dr. Edith Farnsworth House that was designed by Mies van der Rohe, which is a structure, and the walls are all glass, while it's iconic, it is not necessarily something that we just naturally say, yeah, that's a good idea. Opinions differ. You can make a glass structure very energy efficient by having a double and or triple layers of insulated glass, creating it's almost like a thermos bottle kind of effect, insulating the house. And there are different kinds of glass that, although they let visible light through, will block the infrared rays that would heat up a house in the summertime. So there are great advances in glass, but it's not necessarily a done deal that aesthetically, for the specificity of the sites, and that's something really important. This is this particular project. I mean, if it were to go forward, it's imagined that it's on a waterfront, and there would be a dock, and there would be a sailboat tied up in fair weather anyway. But exactly where the dock is, and exactly where the house can be located on the site, is an important factor. Now, that doesn't really start to get solved in programming. That's just the very beginning of schematic design. But we have to be aware of what the site is. And we have to be able to communicate ideas back and forth. From my point of view, the collaborative nature of design between owner with their aspirations and architect with his or her inspirations and ideas is a very valuable play of thought and form and examining different possibilities. But it all comes out of the written program. Now, in the case of another sweet little project that came along, a very nice lady in a suburban town in Connecticut had decided that she would like a better kitchen, and she found a firm that let's just say that the firm's owner's name was Smith. It was Smith Architectural Design LLC. So naturally, she thought she was working with a fully trained architect, because in the state of Connecticut, you cannot provide architectural design without the involvement of an architect. As it turned out, this unlicensed person was in quite a pickle, because the state of Connecticut strictly regulates the use of the phrase architectural design. But let us not digress. She said, well, I'd like a better kitchen. And he showed her some photographs of some $500,000 kitchen that he designed that had been published in Architectural Digest. Now, that's one of the funny things about the publishing business. Architectural Digest is really a decorating magazine. It's not an architectural magazine. It's full of fantasy projects that people with unlimited budgets have funded. But this designer was very proud of this $500,000 kitchen and proceeded to start making drawings, just, you know, drawing away. There was no written program. If there had been, there would have been also included the notion also that she wanted to expand the kitchen. And he started working on that also, but without any kind of basic understanding written down so that it would be a point of reference to come back to about the limitations of budget. She told him time and again that her budget was $100,000, which does not go very far when you're adding 10 or 12 feet by 20 feet to the end of your kitchen as a sunroom, plus new kitchen cabinets, plus new kitchen appliances. And that was a problem eventually when she was most dismayed to get a bid for this project at $325,000 plus. And it was very dismaying, but there was no document establishing that the parameters were $100,000 of budget for everything. In which case, there should have been a modification of the understood scope of what was possible. It's either sunroom plus some new kitchen appliances, or new kitchen and forget about the sunroom. Because construction is expensive. Even though we're in the middle of the Great Depression version 2.0, we're still paying fairly high rates for labor, for skilled labor. You know, the people who are going to do work are not going to do it for free simply because there's not a lot of work. They still have to pay bills. So there's not really been a diminution of the cost of construction, despite the economic mayhem. And so, in a way, you see, the process fell down here during programming, because there was no documentation of expectations. It really, really focuses the mind on what do we really intend when we write it down and we agree to it. And then it becomes a contractual obligation on the part of the architect to have to work towards. I mean, all too often, the process of trying to hammer out exactly what it is you're going to do will go awry, and we'll find that we're not talking to each other. We're just sort of drifting along in a dream state, you know, like we're on different planets or taking different drugs, and during the programming of even a simple project, all sorts of things will come up, personal details and laundry lists of random things, a this and a that, and it has to feel good, and you know, it should stoke my sense of self-esteem, people will tell you the most amazing things, like, you know, my libido is so tied up in my cooking. which suggests this next musical track. Thank you. Yeah. That was, of course, Patti Smith singing Kurt Cobain's Smells Like Teen Spirit. And, well, what was architectural about that? Well, from my point of view, where she inserts her own dystopian rant about the glue-sniffing, shaved-head children of the junkyard. That flood of words, it's one of the problems that our profession has. Our client may be free-associating about things that they want, where those of us who are more academically inclined might come back with some sort of weird, made-up, archy-speak rant, you know, talking and talking and talking and not really communicating. That's all I want to say about that for you, my colleagues, and you know that I know who you are out there. We've disagreed about the meaning of some of your bloated dystopian pronouncements, which I think do nothing to help us do what we're supposed to be doing, which is making the world a better place and taking care of our clients. By the way, we are brought to you by Cabot Cheese of Vermont. Dairy farm family owned since 1919. For your favorite party recipes, let the great taste of Cabot Cheese make them even more special. Learn more about Cabot Cheese at cabotcheese.com. Thanks. So the program, it should be written down. That gives us a real firm basis of where are we going to go with the design. Now, my own experience, getting back to the whole idea of perhaps this house on the water with lots of glass and lots of windows, lots of natural light. Well, there are lots of different ways to get natural light into a building. I was presented with a challenge by a bank holding company. They needed a new headquarters, and they showed me a book. They said, Curtis, this is the building that we want. There was a tiny little pavilion, maybe 4,000 square feet. Their program, and we went through all the different spaces that they were going to need, was over 20,000 square feet. And I said, gentlemen, because they're all men there, so I could say that. I cannot simply put this building in the copy machine and blow it up. And they said, well, the building has a cupola. It has a mansard roof with slate tiles on it. It has red brick. It has coined corners. It has true divided light windows. It has a portico with Ionic capitals. And the columns are not fluted. They're straight. And besides that, you know, you can do whatever you want. So it was stipulated that it was to be a brand new Georgian-style building, and that was part of the program, and that was part of our meeting minutes, and it was incorporated as part of the program. It aesthetically had to have those aesthetic elements, and it was, you know, take it or leave it. Well, it's not the building that I would have created for them, but it is a building that they wanted. And in the end, they were very pleased with what we were able to create. So the next step that happens then really is the beginning of design, in schematic design. But I want to leave that for another evening. We have lots to talk about in terms of design in the process. I just wanted to mention in passing also the that last song, Patty's Little Poem, has so much to do, if we can change the subject here just somewhat, with the poetry of the symbolist poet Paul Verlaine, who was around about 100 years ago, 110 years ago. There was this movement called symbolism, and you can't really talk about the Belle Epoque the Grand Art Nouveau explorations of 100 years ago or so, without talking about Paul Verlaine or Eric Satie or Toulouse-Lautrec, because these people are all part of that same period, along with Hector Gaudi, creating a whole integrated world of art. And Patti Smith writes poetry. As a matter of fact, they made her a chevalier in France for her poetry. Here's a little Paul Verlaine poem. It's very brief. It's called Moonlight. Your soul is like a landscape fantasy, where masks and bergamasks in charming wise strum lutes and dance, just a bit sad to be hidden beneath their fanciful disguise, singing in minor mode of life's largesse and all victorious love, yet they seem quite reluctant to believe their happiness, and their song mingles with the pale moonlight, the calm pale moonlight, whose sad beauty, beaming, sets the birds softly dreaming in the trees, and makes the marble fountains gushing, streaming, slender jet fountains sob their ecstasies. Well, yeah. I wonder today how we could integrate more poetry into our thinking about our architectural design. I leave that for you, the listener, to make suggestions. You can find me on Facebook, Curtis B. Wayne. Send me a message. Give me some suggestions as how you think we can have a more integrative world of art and poetry and music and design and make the world more rich. Well, it's a cold November night, and this has been burning down the house. Let us enjoy our Thanksgiving. Let us all give thanks and praise. As we go out into the night, I'll have a little more Patti Smith. Thank you for listening.
Take me now, baby, here's I am. Pull me close, try and understand. Desire is hunger, is the fire I breathe. Love is a banquet on which we feed.
Disguised as lust, here in our bed until the morning comes.